This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
Kia ora koutou, friends and listeners, and welcome back to another Books Uncovered. I'm Bella, one half of the show, and it's just me in the studio today. Holly is very busy with multiple events on at the Athenaeum Library this week, including what would have been yesterday for National Poetry Day, a pretty amazing event that she's put together with a lot of Dunedin's foremost poets and writers. So I hope everyone had a lovely National Poetry Day yesterday and went along to an event or just read some good poetry. Unfortunately, I didn't think to make the show poetry themed today, but we'll do another poetry episode soon because I know Holly loves talking about poetry as well and is a very accomplished poet herself. So, yeah, you just had to put up with me today, and I'm just going to talk about some of the books I've been reading lately and kind of ramble on about them a bit more than I might normally to fill up the full time that we have here today. So first of all, I read this book this the other day. It's called A Room Above a Shop by Anthony Shapland. So this is a short, powerful novel, debut novel actually, by Welsh artist and writer Anthony Shapland. I've seen it described as like a short novel or novella, or also it could just be a long poem, if that tells you a little bit about how it was written. And I actually first read this whole book in one sitting. It is quite short and it's easy read is not quite the word, but like it goes down easy. But then I immediately picked it back up and started again because I wanted to savour it more on the second go. I'm quite a fast reader, so I find sometimes it doesn't really go in. So if it's something that I really enjoy, I'll often read it again for a second time just so I really make sure I'm like, you know, really taking in all the writing. This book also did make me cry in the break room at my work, so that's a pretty ringing endorsement. Luckily, it was just me in there. In this book, you follow B and M, who meet and connect in the pub one evening, and then you follow them as they build an intimate and quiet relationship behind closed doors in the room above M's hardware shop. This is a really beautifully written, and I found it to be a really haunting novel about two men in 1980s rural Wales who fall in love and then have to keep it a complete secret. So the story is set against the backdrop of the AIDS epidemic in Section 28, which, if you're not aware, it was a law passed in 1988 by the British Conservative government that stopped councils and schools promoting the teaching of the acceptability of homosexuality as a pretended family relationship. So these two characters are living at a time when politicians would pronounce on the validity of the lived experience of others, where law was being shaped by religious and moral condemnation. And I was reading some interviews with Anthony Shapland where he talks about how he feels like we're really back then now with the LGBTQ+ community, except this time it's the T, not the G. And he says people are pronouncing from the sidelines. There's the same dehumanisation and the same institutional bullying. So this was quite a powerful read with that in mind. And I really enjoyed it. And so you feel like, and the reality is that literally everything is at stake for these men. And Shapland also said in an interview that he really needed readers in the present day to feel that this wasn't an affair or a singular thing to hide, but a whole existence. I'll read a quote that kind of encapsulates that feeling you get in the book. Always lying, exposed, they would be shamed. Shamed in the town that knows their mothers and their fathers, their brothers and sisters and their pets, and all the stories, lies and missteps they have ever taken as children, as boys, as men. It would mean leaving. Another interesting thing about this novel and the setting is that I've read quite a few books now about the AIDS epidemic, but they're usually always set in like big cities, so I found the rural, isolated setting of this to be a really interesting and evocative one. What mesmerised me the most about Shapland's writing was his extraordinary ability to craft atmosphere. And he writes really beautifully about nature as well. Like, you can smell the damp grass and moss. You can feel the weight of the overcast sky above a landscape that is as vivid as it is lonely. And each word is perfectly placed, and every paragraph sort of brims with this really evocative imagery. And at its core, it's just a really wonderful book about love. It's really heartbreaking at the same time, hence me crying in the break room at my job. But it's not quite in the way you expect it to be, so it kind of subverts a little bit of that classic queer romance story. And yeah, there's so much love in this novel and care, and you see that in the characters of B and M, and I saw it specifically in M and the gentle, quiet way he cares for his partner, his daughter, and his family. There's another quote. "It's a world only they know, the place they have for each other, a refuge, a hide. No word or deed reaches the ground from this floating platform, on this mattress, this raft, on this ocean adrift in the afternoon sun, this room lightly tethered by stairs." I have seen this book described over and over as tender, and yeah, you know what, it is, and we love a tender gay novel. And I really loved this. It's one of my favourite books I've read so far this year. And yeah, I saw Chaplin quoted Carson McCullers and Edith Wharton as big influences for this novel, and I can really see that in the way he writes vulnerability and the way he taps into the world of hidden, unspoken things. So if you like Carson McCullers and Edith Wharton, I'd really recommend this to you. Also, if you liked Clear by Caris Davies, which I've also spoken about on this show, I would recommend this to you as well. So now, in honour of this book and its tender gaze, I'm going to play some Sufjan Stevens, another tender gay who was fond of making me cry. This is For the Widows in Paradise for the Fatherless in Ypsilanti, off his album Greetings from Michigan, the Great Lakes State. So that was For the Widows in Paradise for the Fatherless in Ypsilanti by Sufjan Stevens, one of my favourite artists, and yeah, very talented at making me cry. So yeah, that was sums up my talking about A Room Above a Shop by Anthony Shapland. And the next book I've wanted to talk about that I've read recently is called Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil by V.E. Schwab. So this was the newest novel by a very popular fantasy author, V.E. Schwab, who's written nearly 24 books since she first made her debut in 2011. Some of her big hits have been The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue and the Shades of Magic series, among a lot of others that have really hit a note with book buyers. So this one I was attracted to because it really sounded like it was written specifically for my interests. The marketing hook for the book was literally the slogan, toxic lesbian vampires. It's got different timelines, which I love. There's female rage and revenge. Like, I was like, hello, this is perfect for me. And if you've listened to much of the show, you probably have noticed that I love lesbian vampires. The reason I love lesbian vampires is because I think it's a really interesting trope that has a lot of promise to, like, be subverted. Vampires are typically associated with the other, like, especially when you look at 1970s horror movies about lesbian vampires, it sort of taps into this fear of people of, like, the queer people as the other, sort of using their allure and sexuality to sort of, you know, lure people over to the dark side. And generally in these books, and specifically like camp horror classics, the lesbian vampire evil is, you know, eventually defeated by the masculine hero. So with that in mind, and the long history of vampire canon as it always represents the fear of the other. So it's, you know, associated with lots of communities, queer people, like Jewish people, travellers, that sort of thing. I think with that in mind, that's why I love the trope, because it has such potential to be subverted in really interesting and rewarding ways. That's why I really loved the Gilda stories, which I talked about in quite a few episodes ago, which talks about a queer black vampire and follows her throughout her life and really deals with these issues of morality and existentialism when you're immortal, queerness and race in a really beautiful, interesting way. So I'm always kind of hoping for another book to live up to that. Also, vampires are just fun and sexy, and I think that's why I have high hopes when people, when I'm like, oh, a new vampire novel that deals with queerness. I really want it to be good. Just as a background on my fascination of lesbian vampires. But if you've also listened to the show, you would probably have noticed that lesbian vampire books have hurt me a lot in the past, especially in this last year. I've read a lot of quite disappointing ones. So I made sure I had very medium expectations going into this one. And that was to protect myself from being disappointed, but also in the hope that I might be pleasantly surprised. So I haven't read any V. Schwab before, but she is a very beloved author, so I thought I might finally be in with a chance to have a book that could really be up there with The Gilda Stories or Woman Eating by Claire Coda, which I loved and I might talk about in a future episode. I'll get into the plot and then I'll talk about what I thought about the book. So this is the story of three young women who are linked through the centuries. Our first is Maria in 1530s Spain, who is a wild, headstrong woman and who's sure there's more to the world than her tiny town, and she's really desperate to escape. Then we skip forward to nearly 300 years later in the English countryside, where we follow Charlotte as she is sent away to the city to enter Regency London society and find herself a husband. She can feel herself being wedged into a life of conformity that she does not want. And then finally there is 2019's Alice, who crosses the ocean from Scotland to America to escape her grief and start anew, not realising that heartache is not so quickly left behind. We follow Alice when she meets a beautiful, magical girl at a party. But after a dreamy one-night stand, Alice finds herself transformed in ways that she hadn't imagined possible and didn't agree to. Alice, confused and tortured by an insatiable hunger, goes in search of answers and finds herself drawn into a centuries-old drama. So now I'll go into my thoughts. It started off promising. The first few chapters I was enjoying. You focused on Maria in 1530 Spain. There was good atmosphere. I liked the tone. And there was a promise of it being something really sharp and devastating. And then as we got further into the story, just wasn't clicking for me. I feel like there were way too many metaphors and not enough emotion. There were just these scenes where the prose got so poetic it really drowned out the punch. It was like roses, rot, ruin. Yes, there's lots of pretty words, but I really wanted it to have more gut. I wanted it to be less aesthetic and more ache. This sort of felt like, I'm probably going to be quite mean, but it felt like a Pinterest board someone had put together of like gothic lesbian moody vampires, but didn't really have much substance behind it. I also really didn't vibe with the writing style. It felt really emotionally distant and pretty dense with similes and metaphors, and lots of them felt quite clunky or oddly phrased. I found that lack of emotional resonance made it a lot harder to connect with the book's presumed themes of losing your humanity, grief, and the cycles of abuse. So that really created a barrier to me to feel the feelings that the story seemed to want to explore. Another issue I had was with the characters, and I think this might be to do with the style of writing, creating that emotional distance, but there were these three women who were centuries apart, but their voices essentially became pretty identical, I thought. Like, Maria, I thought, had the most potential, but she got swallowed up by the vagueness of it all, and I really didn't like the ending. I thought, just like, there was no tension, no payoff. It was just kind of a little whimper of a finish. I especially felt like the Alice, the character who's sort of set in modern times, and she felt undercooked. She was meant to be this grieving girl, and then she's also filled with rage because she's been transformed into a vampire without her consent, and then that sort of left on her own to figure out what the hell's happened to her. And I felt like I was watching her from her distance and feeling, I didn't feel connected to her. I didn't feel like that rage with her. I really wanted to feel rageful with her, but I just felt like I was simmering rather than like burning with anger. My other issue with this book was it was the marketing, because the marketing was toxic lesbian vampires. And so I thought with that, that's really drew me in. I was like, oh, that sounds fun. Thinking that it would be like a fun sort of thing about a messy queer vampire relationship, or about the basic, like the toxic part was the basic fact that they're vampires and they do have to eat other humans to survive, that sort of thing. What I wasn't really expecting from the marketing was it to be a centuries long emotionally abusive relationship between two women. I don't expect or want female characters in books to always be morally pure. I think that's really boring and it's patronizing, unrealistic. Like, I love an evil woman. I love exploring different shades of womanhood and, you know, reacting to the patriarchy. But yeah, that was that marketing ploy and the way the book actually played out. And I think it was probably pushed a lot by the publisher. I don't want to put all this on the author herself. But yeah, I wasn't really expecting this to be hundreds of pages of women victimizing other women. Like, it's a novel that's touted as telling the story about queer women taking back their power, subverting gender norms, tackling queer rage and exploring forbidden hunger. But I think a centuries-long emotionally abusive relationship between two women, like, it doesn't, it's not really giving that. Yeah, it was just kind of page of, after page of women being the victims and perpetrators of violence to each other. And I don't know, I just, that didn't really sit right with me. Like, if you've read this and feel differently, please, I don't know how you'd contact me, but, you know, let me know. I'd love to have a debate about it. But yeah, overall, this book I thought was disappointing, sadly. I think in this current reality that queer people and women are living in, I really expected it to feel more radical and defiant, and instead I really wanted it to have something to say, basically, and I don't think that it did. So yeah, in honour of lesbian vampires and lesbian gothic, I'm going to play Girls Against God by Florence and the Machine, because it, I think it does just fit the vibe, and yeah, I love Florence. So that was not the full song. I kind of realised I was running out of time, but that was most of Girls Against God by Florence and the Machine, that I played to wrap up my review of Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil by V.E. Schwab. And that's about the end of our show today. I want to say thank you again, a big thank you to the Dunedin Athenaeum Mechanics Institute, who sponsor this show and who I normally host with their librarian, Holly. And so yeah, please go and check it out in the Octagon if you haven't already, and join. It's a really good price and it's such an amazing place, and I really love that it exists. So help keep it existing by joining up, or even just going in and having a look around, reading through the books. Yeah, go and see Holly, my co-host, at 23 The Octagon, and it's open Tuesday and Wednesday 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and Thursday 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. I'm also going to be donating Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil to the library collection. So if you want to read it and then fight with me about it, or agree with me about it, then you have to join up. Sorry, that's the rules. So yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. And ka kite ono, thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Books Uncovered, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
For more information about hosting events or becoming a member of the Athenaeum Library, please visit our website, dunedinathenaeum.org.nz, or come in and visit us in the Lower Octagon. Our opening hours are Tuesday to Wednesdays, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. and Thursdays, 2 p.m. till 6 p.m.
To listen again to this episode or to find other podcasts in the series, look for Books Uncovered on oar.org.nz or your favourite podcast platform.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.